Since 2002, we've been giving much-needed attention to the Catholic Church sex scandal. It's sad that 17 years later, there are still those inside and outside the church who still insist we downplay or even deny the facts and reality that thousands of children are raped by priests. Fortunately, my first guest today ignored those voices and insisted that the truth be told. It's a truth that's painful and dark, yet it's a truth that many need to learn from, especially since he is the first abuse victim of a man who later became a priest in New Jersey and was among those who were protected by the Catholic Church. We're joined by Michael Martone. How are you today, Michael?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I appreciate your strong voice in this issue. As I said, since my first chance to talk with the Boston Globe reporters back in 2002, this has been one of the topics I've tried to focus on as much as is worthy and certainly possible. Certainly your voice has been something extraordinary, too, because of the results it's produced. Let's just go back to your story, because your story involves an individual by the name of Kevin Gugliotti. Who was he when you knew him? What did he become in spite of his actions?
I knew Kevin for as long as I could remember. He was a close friend to my family. He was someone from our neighborhood. I joined the Boy Scouts when I was 11, and Kevin was already a fixture in my life, almost like a family member at that point. And he was a scout leader. You know, he did many good things for me as my scout leader. You know, one thing in particular that comes to mind, like as a young scout, we always dreamed of going to Philmont. And when I was 15, we did go to Philmont, and that's kind of like a dream come true that Kevin made happen. This is one example of, you know, the kind of things he did for me. And, you know, the abuse happened like after that time. So, the grooming was like well established before the grooming, before the abuse started, I should say. But he was, you know, remained a close friend to my family for quite some time, even after I started distancing myself personally from him, still not seeing things clearly. He was still around my family and a seemingly close family friend.
And with what Kevin did, I mean, this was a time, obviously, before we knew the magnitude of really anything that had been happening and how the Catholic Church had been protecting these rapist priests. And right. I use that word with a purpose, because by saying abusive or pedophile, to me that seems like it's lessening the damage that these individuals did. They're rapists, pure and simple. And how old were you when the actions that Gugliotti perpetrated took place?
Around 16.
So when you're 16, how do you say to someone, well, here's by impression, superficial image at least, that appears to be the all-American individual, that mm-hmm. this is the devil walking in the mortal world? Now, how do you, you know, at that point in time, knowing, you know, the lack of awareness of what was going on, in far, far vast numbers that we even are willing to admit to right now.
Right.
How do you say to someone, well, this is someone who's abusing me? And think that you're going to be believed, first of all.
Right. And you know, the abuse with me was like subtle, and a lot of it was happening when I was sleeping and at first. And so, you know, it was very subtle and confusing and a lot of disbelief, and that this person who I at that point I thought of him as a friend and trusted him a lot, that it just didn't make sense to me, and I didn't know how to make sense of it. So I don't think I was thinking in the terms that you're speaking of. It's such a complicated thing when you're groomed. It's not like a straightforward, this person's doing this to me and I need to tell someone right away. Because of how long he groomed me and my family and my community, it really makes things very fuzzy for a victim. And, you know, at different points in time, I was making sense of it in different ways. So the more distance and space I created, the more I saw things clearly for what they were, and that it was manipulation and abuse and betrayal. And that, you know, eventually I realized others were at risk. And obviously with this new victim coming forward, his propensity for abuse was much greater than I could even see at the time.
Yeah, that's the thing with the googly eye too, because he had yet to become a priest when he perpetrated what he did with you.
Right.
But then the church, once it was revealed what Guglielmi had done with this, and, you know, we don't know how many other victims as well. Well, with your case, that doesn't count because he wasn't a priest yet. I mean, how does that make you feel? Because that's basically what the church said.
Yeah, at the time in 2003, I shared my story with them. I gave a very detailed written account. And he met with them in person, went over that account, answered any questions. And a few months later, they just sent me a letter saying they didn't find anything to substantiate my claims. And I really didn't know how to react to that. But I just felt like I did what I could do, and I wanted to move forward. And obviously, that wasn't enough to stop him. But, in hindsight, I'm pretty disgusted. I didn't track where he was in his career or anything like that. But to find out years later that they not only assigned him less than 3 miles from my house, they assigned him to work with children. So they did, they did nothing with the information I gave them. It's just mind-boggling. And certainly when I see them put his name on a list and put in parentheses child pornography, not even acknowledging my claim still, it's kind of like, hurtful.
Michael's referring to the list that came out with the Archdiocese of New Jersey, the various archdioceses, I believe it was 185 names. And we talked about Guglielmi too a couple of weeks ago with Mark Crawford from Snap. This was the pedophile priest who was simply penalized because of kiddie porn, nothing else that he did. And he rationalized the kiddie porn by saying he was out to get revenge against God for his poker losses. Which, I mean, when you heard that, how can you say that? Is this the real world? I mean, that's just insanity.
Yes. I mean, it just points to the fact that he had a lot more issues going on that clearly the church and his advisors in the seminary should have picked up on or been aware of. And he certainly didn't hide his gambling habit. I really don't even know how to respond to him blaming God for his actions.
It's one of the things that I don't think there's a collection of words you can put that can rationalize or explain or bring a greater understanding other than just total idiocy. We're talking with Michael Martone, who has come out before as a victim of a pedophile priest, Kevin Guglielmi, and has now attached his name to the actions to hopefully give. Well, did you want to give, knowing where you had been and where you are now, can you imagine that there are other voices out there who are sitting in silence out of fear? And do you hope that you, by going from Mr. X to Michael Martone, that you can be a catalyst for other voices to come forward?
Yes. I mean, someone coming forward to, like, the Union County prosecutors or any local prosecutor where the abuse occurred, or even calling the Attorney General hotline. It doesn't mean you're going public. It just means that you're sharing your story with the authorities and you're willing to do what you need to do. And those authorities would protect your anonymity and your identity, and still be able to bring them to justice. I'm getting a lot of support. Like, I've been sharing my story. After it was published in the Star Ledger and on NJ.com, I've been sharing my story on Facebook and then started sharing it publicly on Facebook. I've gotten tons of support, and, the vast majority of people do believe my story. So, if someone came forward, they are going to be believed. And the thing to keep in mind is in 1996, they changed the criminal statutes of limitations. It's much longer for a lot of offenses, and there actually is no statute of limitations for the more heinous offenses of child sex abuse. So in 1996, they changed the statute of limitations, but they didn't make it retroactive, so it didn't apply to me. But anyone that he's abused since 1996 is in a much more powerful position than I am to hold him criminally accountable.
Certainly thanks to the work of Senator Vitale, who for decades has been trying to get the statute of limitation laws shifted around for more fairness to benefit the victims as opposed to protect the perpetrators, and that has finally come to pass, thankfully.
Right. Yeah, that you're speaking. I was speaking of the criminal statute of limitations. You're now speaking of the civil statute of limitations, which people before 96, they can't make the criminal retroactive. So the civil statute of limitations that's opening up, people like me, that's their only means of seeking justice in these cases. And what's important about these civil cases is, as opposed to the Victim Compensation Fund that the Archdiocese of Newark is offering, the compensation fund is simply that, a compensation fund. You give your allegation, these two individual, independent people decide whether it's credible or not. They, if it's credible, they offer you a reward, and if you accept the reward, they give you the reward. But that's simply monetary, which is fine for some victims, but that doesn't give us the information we need. That doesn't give us Kevin's file. That doesn't tell us why Archbishop Myers made such poor decisions in not taking action on my allegations. It doesn't really uncover anything. If you bring a civil suit, you have discovery, which would, demand such documents and demand that, leaders of the church be deposed under oath. So if we want to know who knew what and when and how something so heinous can happen in terms of a cover-up, really civil action is the only way to go. We're not, victims are not going to get that by just accessing the compensation fund. I greatly appreciate all, the persistence of Senator Vitale and all the support he got. I mean, it was overwhelming, the passing of the bill through the Senate, 32-1, and the Assembly was 70-0.
Yes, it was.
With 5 abstaining. So that's a clear message from our legislators in New Jersey that the Catholic Church does not have the power that it had, because they've been at this for 20 years, and time again, the Catholic Church had enough influence to stall such a bill.
I want to give you the phone number for the New Jersey Attorney General's hotline for priest sexual abuse that Michael referred to. It's 855-363-6548, 855-363-6548, because as you've heard with Michael, and certainly with other voices that we've had here on the show, other stories I've relayed to you, you feel like you're a castaway on an island because of what happened to you, the recessed memories, the pains they cause, with all the news that we're talking about, and that you certainly hear in various other platforms, that you're hopefully realizing that it's not just you and it's not because of you that what happened. And it's important for you to add your voice to this conversation, to these revelations, to further bring justice for all who were injured by these evil people who perpetrated what they did. New Jersey Attorney General's hotline again is 855-363-6548. And for you, Michael, I can only imagine, certainly not understand, the emotional, physical torment, and I don't know if it's damage or not, because is recovery possible from what happened to you?
I believe so. I mean, I think I'm still in the process. I mean, it impacts things in your life that you don't even, you don't really see the connections in terms of how vulnerable you are and how you interact with other people. It certainly, shook my trust in people in general, and I think because of that I have, limited relationships in my life. but it's something I'm working on. I do have the support I need in terms of counseling. But I do believe going public with this and getting the support and having, you know, I mean, I've not really kept it a secret if people ask me, but just throwing, you know, Kevin and Archbishop Meyer's secret out there and off of me is definitely a healing experience for me, even in, within the course of a week. So I don't know, you know, it's hard for me to say whether I ever would fully recover, because, you know, worse than the physical abuse is just the sense of betrayal. And I have had the opportunity to interact with parishioners at St. Bartholomew's where the new abuse happened, and they have that same feeling of anger, betrayal. I mean, you can, you know, I got the sense that they really fell in love with him at St. Bartholomew's. He really groomed boys, families, the whole parish, and I don't see it as me just being his victim. Like, I think my family, my community, like anyone that he, the greater grooming that he did of the community, like, we're all his victims, honestly. I mean, something I would like to add about the hotline and the work the Attorney General is doing, like with the case of Kevin, I mean, they're interested in hearing what Kevin did even before he was a priest. But then even in general, they're not just interested in the individual perpetrators. They really want to hear what happened with the system. Like, how could something like this happen? You know, when I shared my story with them, they paused at the parts of like, wait, you told them what, when? They're not just looking at the perpetrators. They're looking at the system and the organization and how they could have allowed this to keep happening and move priests around and protect priests.
In the case in point, the Patterson Diocese, Bishop Frank Rodimer actually admitted in a deposition that he had ordered the destruction of records for part of the quote-unquote secret archive that they're using to protect and cover the tracks of these rapist priests.
Right.
So
right.
The more information that the Attorney General's office has, the more they can put weight on the church and the various organizations to make things, well, not right, but as right as possible for the healing and the recovery. Because as you heard Michael say, I remember asking a domestic abuse victim once, after what happened to you, how can you love someone again? Well, after what happened to Michael and countless others, yeah, you can go over to our website on the download page. I had the Pennsylvania grand jury report, and you see the number of victims page after page after page. Same in New Jersey, although it was a little more general, but you still see multiple victim over and over and over again. Imagine for you listening, if you lost the element of trust in your life, what kind of life would you have? Well, certainly not a happy one. But the only way for recovery is through facts and truth, and that's part of what Michael is doing, what other voices are doing, what organizations like SNAP are doing, and fortunately what the New Jersey Attorney General's office is doing. So the hotline number and the various outlets are available to make things right. And they're important and they're valuable. Again, 855-363-6548, that's the Attorney General's hotline. If you have a story to tell, as detailed or partially detailed as you possibly can, just to add to the conversation, to the discovery, and to the arrival of truth and facts, that's the starting point and the outlet, and your voice, and you are not alone. You will be believed. You will be trusted. If there is a naysayer out there, fortunately, I think we can say at this point in time, Michael, nowadays the naysayers are the minority. It wasn't always the case in 2002, 2003, and there were a lot of defenders that someone like you was, if you came forward, you would be attacked and the church would have been protected. But that fortunately has changed now.
Yes, that's the sense I'm getting. You know, the big thing for victims to realize is they did nothing wrong. I mean, we did nothing wrong. It's all on our perpetrators. So in my case, you know, me and any other victims of Kevin, we didn't do anything wrong. Kevin did something wrong. And it's not our secret. You know, if you have any anger at yourself, it's really, you're not mad at, you know, you're mad that you're keeping his secret. You may not realize that, but it's not our secret. It's Kevin's secret. It's Archbishop Meyer's secret. And, you know, it's, you know, why keep it? Just throw it out there, whether it's public or just through the authorities or civil action. Just throw it out there. It's not our secret. It's theirs.
Well, yours is a strong voice. We've linked over to Michael's article, too, from NJ.com for you to read. Hopefully, if you are a victim who's been sitting in silence, suffering in silence, it will be one of those springboards that will motivate you to step forward into the light, because you don't deserve the darkness that the actions of others have imprisoned you in. Michael, thank you so much for raising your voice all through this time, and now even going further by adding your name to the story, because that is a huge game changer for so many people out there who are going to find courage and drive and determination in that. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time.